Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Why do we buy things we don't really need? All but the most disciplined among us have done it on occasion. We enter a store with a short and specific shopping list and leave with a lot more than we intended to buy. Sometimes that shopping trip reminds us of things we actually require. But just as often, our spending is influenced by a barrage of sophisticated marketing gimmicks designed to keep us shopping longer and to trigger intense cravings for whatever the retailer has to offer. My guest today knows all about those methods because before he had a change of heart, he used to help corporations develop and execute them. Marketing consultant turned consumer advocate Martin Lindstrom has served as an advisor to companies including McDonald's, Procter & Gamble, and Microsoft. His newest book is called Brandwashed: Tricks Companies Use to Manipulate Our Minds and Persuade Us to Buy. Martin, welcome back to Think.
Thank you.
As part of your research for this book, you challenged yourself to go a full year without buying anything branded. First of all, how hard was it to find things?
Well, Chris, I so much failed, I tell you. My intention was 1 year. I ended up with half a year. And the whole idea was to say, well, can I live without brands? Meaning, I really design brands. I've created brands throughout my whole life. Is it possible for me to avoid the own tricks I actually created myself? And the answer was no. I started to travel around the world, and after half a year, I gave up.
Well, you lost your suitcase, and then you realized there was just no way around it.
That was actually the story. The story was that I'm always dressed in black when I'm doing my keynote presentations, and I ended up in Cyprus, of all places. My suitcase was gone. And the only kiosk which were around the corner was a kiosk selling I Love T-shirt. I Love a Cyprus T-shirt in white. So I bought that one and have had nightmares ever since.
We should say you do indeed count store brands as brands, because although we might feel like somehow we're skipping out on the real thing, these are very often marketed to us with very sophisticated techniques.
Absolutely. You have to remember at the end of the day that a retail store is what we call a zone of seduction. Mm-hmm. This is not a place to go around and think you're being entertained. It's, of course, nice to be entertained, but in the end of the day, those money you have in your pocket have to go into their pockets. So what they do is to use really sophisticated techniques to persuade us to use more money. Like, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but if you walk around the store anti-clockwise, you actually spend more money, in fact, $2 on average, than if you walk clockwise around the store, simply because it's easier to grab things with your right hand. Or in some cases, retailers are putting in what I call speed bumps. Can you believe that? It really is. Do you remember when we had this car license, when we got that when we were young? Mm-hmm. Well, we learned that those speed bumps, you have to slow down. Well, we now still have that built into our brain, slow down, and that's exactly what we're doing. So we walk around with our shopping carts, and then these speed bumps makes us slow down and actually spend an average 15 seconds more in the retail store. And you may say, that's not a lot. Well, it is because, and get this, an average woman reaching the age of 63 years actually has spent 25,236 hours in a retail store shopping, which is the same as 8 years. So if you can extend that with 15 seconds per visit, that equals the same as an increase of more than $400 million in spend per year worldwide.
That it sort of makes me want to cry to think about 8 years of my life at some point spent in the store.
I agree.
So we've become aware in recent years, Martin, that brands are indeed trying to hook people younger. You learned that there are some companies out there trying to get our kids before they have left the womb.
Yes, that's really, really sad. And actually, it came down to a sort of a discovery I made by myself. Mm-hmm. Because I was a victim, not for that, but for something similar. I love bossa nova, the music. And, you know, My dad always told me they were playing bossa nova when they were young. So I thought, hey, the reason why I love it is probably because it was played for me when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I guess I was wrong here because, in fact, the very day my mom and dad went to hospital for me to be born, and they actually rushed so quickly out of the house that they dropped the record player, which we had around those days, on the floor And it was never repaired later on. So they never listened to Bossa Nova, only while I was in the womb. And so basically, I was primed for music while I was still not born, and today still have a preference and a warm, fuzzy feeling around that particular music. Now, that insight actually made me realize, hey, it may be from a commercial point of view there's something going on which we're not aware of. So as I was traveling around for 3 years doing the research for my new book, Brandwashed, I realized in Asia that, in fact, there is some manufacturer which is pushing this very hard. In fact, there is a major candy manufacturer called Copico, which actually is producing this beautiful little candy tasting like coffee, and they're actually giving this away to pregnant women via the pediatricians. And in fact, what happens is that the taste preference is going through the mother into the womb of the unborn baby and generating a preference for this product, which means that there's a huge uptake of newborn babies and young kids wanting to have the Copico's latest release, which happened to be ordinary coffee, and they're actually drinking it at a very, very young age, which is, I don't need to tell you, it's incredibly scary, but which is a good indication of that it does indeed happen. Most of the time, it's a coincidence. In few cases, you may question it.
Another tactic used on kids is providing these online games linked to a product that subtly or not so subtly encourage not only demand for that particular product, but push consumption overall. Can you talk a little bit about these?
Well, absolutely. And you know what? It happens all over the place, so we're not really thinking about it. I think it's fascinating and a bit scary, too, when we think about Apple, for example. There's today some apps coming out, which is the baby phone app, and there's one called the Infant Arcade, which is developed for basically for toddlers or for babies. And just get this one, Chris, I love this. We actually did an experiment with babies. I believe we had around 25 babies in this experiment where we gave them a BlackBerry and an iPhone. And we asked them to switch it on, as much as we could explain that for babies between 9 months and 36 months of age. And what was fascinating to see was that most of those babies and toddlers, in fact, were swiping their fingers over the display as you do for an iPhone, even on the BlackBerry. So even at a very young age, we start to create some sort of indirect brand preference, or you could say branded navigation, which means that for the rest of our life, it will stuck to our brains. Now, this also then leads to the fact that a lot of computer games now have become entertaining devices. And if a baby is starting to play those games, and later on when we grow up, we continue playing those games, and they are then linked to a purchase, or even so that maybe it's Angry Birds you're playing, and you can buy these Angry Birds as a piece of merchandising in the retail store, or it may even be that there is some conflicts with Angry Birds on it, and you played it for the last half year, well, you have a preference for that. And even more, if you then sign up for that game to get the extended version, well, then it starts to get information about the household. And we have seen incredibly scary information, and I'm writing a lot about that in Brandwashed, about children which have been asked by manufacturers to type in information about the parents' purchase behavior, i.e. what toothpaste are they using and what type of car they're driving in and how old are they, and then they'll get extra bonus points in their game. And that's really what's going on there right now. And that's the reason why I'm writing Brandwashed, because I feel this has gone too far. And even though I'm advising companies on brands, I think it's time to put a line in the sand and say, hey, enough is enough. This is the time for us to clean up our own act.
Products that used to be for adults only are now being repackaged to entice children. They are selling, I was astonished by this, the hair removal cream Nair is being sold to 10-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, you know, that whole trend is just so ghastly, as it's not even funny. I remember there was a story last year in the UK, and I hope I'm quoting this right, but it was one of the major retailers, Tesco or Sainsbury, which actually were promoting a new product, which were a sort of a makeup kit. And the slogan was basically saying, get the wild kitten inside you out. And that was targeting girls at the age of six.
Oh, my goodness.
That was creating such an outcry in the UK, so it was withdrawn. But we've seen the same happening with Walmart and other retailers in this country where they are going too far. The problem here is, and I'll tell you a very scary insight, which I find incredibly sad. The puberty of young kids now is changing. And because of the plastic we exposed for when we're eating our food, because of the PVC in general, which we are obtaining into our body, the age of puberty is changing. And it basically means that if you take the average age of a girl's and her puberty, or a boy's and his puberty, it's actually changed over the last 10 years more than 1 year. So we basically are getting the puberty at a younger and younger age. And what it means is, you know, if it starts to be very commercial, that basically manufacturers which are releasing products which are very dependent on you getting into the puberty age, which is really shaving creams, shaving products, all the stuff with sanitary productions, whatever it is, if you're starting to manufacture that and sell it to young kids, or suddenly you're getting 1 year free of charts. And that means you're starting to go younger and younger, and that's exactly what we're seeing happening. And then, of course, there are some manufacturers which are going even further, because fashion today dictates us how we should look like. So we do feel it's important for us, and kids feel it's important for them to look more mature and more popular and more fancy, because they have such a huge peer pressure in school. So yes, this is happening, and I had to tell you, this is just the beginning.
The irony is, you know, most, at least adult women, would give thousands of dollars to have the skin of their 10-year-old as opposed to, you know, wanting their kids to look older.
Yeah, it is. It is very ironic. And it's also ironic to see that a lot of the photo models are younger than 15 years in some countries for adults advertising for facial creams, because they do have that skin everyone else wants. So it's really reverse aspiration we're talking about here.
So there are few things more powerful and motivating, Martin, than fear. Talk about this worry that we all have these days that there are germs on every surface, so that things need to be not simply clean but sanitized.
Well, there's many things to say. I went into a restaurant the other day here in New York City, and as I was standing in the line, I then was accepted to find a table, went down to the table, and caught the menu card, and a guy literally ran after me and said to me, "Hey, you forgot to put that sanitizing Purell on your hand." So now we're starting to have this almost police-like society where we need to clean our hands using a chemical product. Now, this is not a coincidence. In fact, that whole trend is only 5 years old. It happened when SARS and the swine flu occurred. And what is really scary, or perhaps even shocking here, is that you cannot stop SARS or swine flu or any of these type of diseases by using Purell or any other type of sanitizing chemical on your hands, because it's basically air-driven. And what's interesting here is that we have been primed to believe that, so much so that when you go into the border control into Chicago O'Hara Airport, they even have on the loudspeakers that you have to use this. This is the first message you receive as a foreigner coming into the country. So what happens right now is we're starting to be incredibly obsessed with this sanitizing thing, and that is very addictive. It is so addictive that if you go to Japan and take a look at women there, they are so obsessed with this that most children are not allowed to go outside at all whatsoever throughout childhood. They double wash things before you basically have some food. You actually have to go to the shower. So this is really clean as it can be. But what's also fascinating is that those children have the lowest immune system in the world. And that's exactly the trend we're seeing coming here. So this is a hidden brand message. We've been brandwashed.
Martin Lindstrom is with us. His new book is called Brandwashed: Tricks Companies Use to Manipulate Our Minds and Persuade Us to Buy. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a self-designed program that allows an unconventional approach to your graduate education. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with marketing consultant and consumer advocate Martin Lindstrom, whose new book is called Brandwashed: Tricks Companies Use to Manipulate Our Minds and Persuade Us to Buy. If you'd like to join the conversation, we do have lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. So, Martin, the flip side of all of our worry about contamination is this idea that we will buy things we perceive as fresh like crazy. Talk a little about how stores and marketers promote the impression that everything they're selling is straight from the farm.
Well, you have to remember, in the good old days, everything was amazing. And that's not just something I'm saying. We actually are hardwired to believe that. Using fMRI, we realized that when we think about the old days, it always is more positive. It's actually called rosy memories, or they even have a name called the Charles Dixon Lost Childhood Memory Syndrome, which basically was an author which always talked about the past and how glamorous they were. And I think I'm sure that you tried it yourself if you're celebrating any particular season, Christmas or whatever, that when it happens, you always think about the good old days as being fantastic. Now, that is exactly what marketeers are playing on, because at the end of the day, because we are under so much pressure today, we feel guilty, we feel stressed, we're afraid of losing our jobs, and basically the world is not what it was once, at least in our mind. We want to buy the past. So just to give you an idea, there's a brand called Baileys. Do you know Baileys, that liquor brand?
Baileys Irish Cream, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Now, most people will say, that's a pretty old brand. How old do you think it is?
Oh, I would think 75 years.
Well, I can tell you it's 37 years.
No kidding.
It is. And that is a package design which was developed by two marketers, by the way, in order to make us believe we're buying something from the good old days. Hmm. Now, that's called what we call symbolics. And symbolics is also used in retail environments in order to make us feel things are fresh. So when you, for example, walk into a Whole Foods or to a Trader Joe's, they will be cutting the fresh flowers as you walk into the main door, through the main doors. And what's interesting is it's not because they want to sell flowers. In fact, most likely they will be losing money on selling the flowers. But let's just swap this around. Imagine they were selling tinned cans or cans of soup with an expiration date of 4 years. I'm sure you will have the impression that the entire store will be old stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's fresh, very fresh goods, then you actually prime yourself to believe, hey, this is really fresh stuff going on in the retail store. And as you then walk into the vegetable and green stuff department, you'll see that they are really sophisticated in working with symbolics. For example, they spray mist on top of the vegetables in some of the retail stores, and they do that with huge success, because when we see that type of mist, we actually are saying to ourselves, hey, this is extra fresh. If you take Winn-Dixie, for example, Winn-Dixie has done that for some time. They even play the sound of thunder in the retail store, so you feel like it's just been raining. Now, here's the bad news. On one hand, we think it's fresh, but on the other hand, actually, that piece of banana or whatever we're picking up, it's actually getting older much quicker because it's exposed for water the way it is. So in fact, we're buying, well, the cat in the bag. So the symbolics is used throughout the entire store, everything from the cardboard boxes where you place the bananas in it, which by the way is not this beautiful cardboard box just been driven in by the farmer this morning. No, it's been reshuffled behind the scene from huge plastic containers into cardboard boxes looking like they're standing alone, but actually it's one gigantic dummy which looks like it just came from Patty's local farm around the corner. So we are buying an illusion. Do I have anything against it? Well, not really, because I think we all like to have an amazing shopping experience, and rather than going into a Russian supermarket with one toothpaste brand, we now have 15 of them. I think we all prefer that. But of course, it starts to be a fine line when you then discover that an average apple is more than 14 months old in a supermarket. That's where it starts to be, well, manipulation.
You know, it's funny. Reading your book actually solved a mystery for me recently. A friend posted on Facebook that she was at the grocery store, at Whole Foods actually, and heard the song Maniac playing. I don't know if you remember this from the 80s, but it was a big hit. And a few days later, oddly, I noticed the same song playing at a craft store, and I thought, what a weird coincidence. And then I read your book, And then I understood. Can you explain to us what that phenomenon was all about?
Well, it's about several things. First of all, when you and I were listening to Maniap, assuming that even though you're old, you're still in between, perhaps in the 30s.
I'm 40.
Oh, you're 40. Okay, here we go. Well, then you were certainly listening to Maniac when you were young. And it, during that period of time, you felt you were young and smart, and it was the heydays of your life. Now, when they're playing Maniac in the store, it's actually for you to feel at home. You feel like you are back in fashion again. You are... Sorry, I can't see you right now. Sorry, I'm offending everyone with 40-plus, including myself, right?
No, it's quite all right.
But
it
really,
is an illusion, I'll tell you that.
You know what it means. You go to a concert with young people, you know, 15 years of age, and you do not understand one single piece of the song because it's just so dreadful, all of them, right? Well, right now you feel like you're back in fashion. You're listening to this music, and actually they are playing music which makes us, our generation, the core target audience in those retail stores, feel we are back in fashion again, and we are actually not that unpopular. And because you feel more in focus, you also feel like you want to show a payback to the retail store. You want to say, hey, we appreciate that. And actually that makes you increase the spend. And in some cases, may even make you feel nostalgic. So some retailers are playing very romantic songs from the 80s and 90s because that's the period of time where you picked up your boyfriend. Mm. And they play that in the flower department. So you feel seriously guilty as you pass by them. Probably have to buy some flowers for your wife.
And I am also apparently the target market for Justin Bieber. Now, I would have thought it was my preteen daughters, but I was wrong.
Yeah, well, that's so fascinating. Now, just going to Japan for a second here. In Japan, you have an unusual phenomenon where young boys, basically between 15 and 18 years of age, are sold indirectly to women in their 40s in order to make them feel comfortable. It's nothing to do with sex. Basically, the women just want someone to talk to because they have no friends and feel very lonely. Mm-hmm. Now, that means when you walk down the streets in Tokyo, you can see all those in principle, beautiful young boys, which are picture perfect and almost looks like girls. And what's interesting is we somewhat see the same trend happening here with just the Biebers of the world. What happens is that in reality, it's actually not necessarily just the daughter which is in love with him. It's actually also the mothers which have some sort of relationship with Justin Bieber. No, it's not from a sexual point of view. But it is perhaps somehow a childhood dream coming back again so mothers can relive the second childhood through their daughters. Hmm. And we then see that the majority of the audience right now is actually not the daughters. It actually is the mothers which secretly actually admire him. Officially, of course, they think it's just stupid, all of it. But certainly when we ran focus groups in Chicago and in Dallas actually as well, mothers, after priming them for 2 hours, finally admitted that they had some sort of strange, weird crush on Justin Bieber because it made them feel young again.
And of course, it's the moms who have the credit cards to buy their daughters the CDs and concert tickets.
Yeah, and to put an awful term on moms, they're called the gatekeepers from a commercial point of view. So if the daughters do not have the money, well, there's only one way to go, and that's the mom. So if you sort of unlock that key, then you're on the right path.
Martin Lindstrom is with us. We're talking about his new book, Brandwashed, Tricks Companies Use to Manipulate Our Minds and Persuade Us to Buy. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we hear from Don in Dallas. Hi, Don.
Hi. I just wanted to address the issue of this whole greenwashing business. And just this morning I walked into a store and I saw Dasani with this new plant eco bottle, and I as an environmentalist myself, I'm really frustrated seeing all these sort of companies trying to adhere to the whole green movement but not really helping out. And I just thought maybe you could touch on that.
Thanks for your call. What can you tell us about that, Martin?
Well, I agree with you, Don, on your frustrations. There was a research study done last year which showed that out of 1,000 brands claiming they were eco-friendly, only 3 of them actually were able to keep their promises.
Wow.
So 997 were failing. Here's the problem. Being green and being eco-friendly is such a, for many people, difficult term to understand, because one thing is, of course, to paint the bottle green, but as you and I know, there's so much more into it, and it's difficult for anyone to get a sense of it. And as soon as a company starts to roll in the marketing machines, we end up in a situation where we really can't look through what is true and what's not true. Well, here's the good news. I actually do think, and that's actually one of the reasons I'm writing this book, I do think we will see the WikiLeaks of brands coming out soon. So just as we have an ordinary WikiLeaks, we'll have a brand WikiLeaks, a control group which is keeping a strong eye on what brands are doing and making sure they keep their promises. Now, the reason why I'm writing the book is because I think it's time for companies to clean up. I love brands. I'm a huge fan of brands. But what I'm not a huge fan of is that they're letting us down. And as we know today, most of us, when we're out shopping, really feel let down. We feel caught in a catch-22. So I fully agree with you. What's the solution? I think there needs to be more pressure and more people like you putting a pressure on the company. And at some stage, hopefully we'll end there. I'm sure we will, or else the earth will go under, I think.
Well, I have to ask you about this, Martin, because obviously for thousands of years, perhaps as long as we have been selling or even trading things, people with things to sell have done their best to make their merchandise appealing. Is it really so different what we're doing today?
It is different for several reasons. First of all, we are bombarded with so much information today that we are much more likely not to react than to react. That means you have to find much more sophisticated ways of breaking through the clutter. Mm-hmm. And that's where it starts to be a bit tricky, because you have to remember that every person sitting behind the scene needs to show some new numbers for the stock exchange. And if you don't meet them, the share price will go down and a lot of people will be angry. So you are pressing the limit, and sometimes people, unfortunately, are going a little bit too far. And that's what you're seeing here. For example, in my book, I'm writing about a lip balm brand, which is called Carmex. And Carmex, as we all know, is a fantastic lip balm, which I think most of us are using, but there's also a secret to it. In fact, what I disclosed in brand was is that they put in a chemical which is making us addicted to the brand. So literally we now can prove that this is an addiction generated by the manufacturer and on purpose, which explains the reason why all of us are using it all the time. And when these things happen, I think we're going too far. And that is because manufacturers now are so desperate to generate more sales and prove that the share price can go up. So, yes, that's different from the past where we just had to feed some children around us and that was it.
For people who are wondering about the Carmex thing, what's in there is salicylic acid, which is also sold, in addition to menthol, which is also sold to, like, remove calluses and corns from people's feet.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you use this?
I don't. You know what's funny is that in high school there was sort of an urban legend that Carmex was addictive, and so I never got in the habit of using it. And apparently, it's true.
It is true, and we spent almost 3 years on doing the Carmex experiment and trying to find out if this is true or not, and finally we managed to nail it down and conclude it's true. So yes, I think it's. What was the title? There was even a book being published about it, I remember, talking about this. So yes, it is true, and it just gives you an insight about what really goes on behind the scene.
Another thing that causes us to buy things is the idea that perhaps we are revolting to the rest of the world. We're too old, we're too fat, we're too smelly. Amazingly, products are also giving us problems that we hadn't worried about before. And talk a little bit about Dove and their new product to make your armpits pretty.
Yeah. Well, you can only admire Unilever, which is the manufacturer behind Dove, because they really have done very well when it comes to doing this stuff. First of all, remember, to have an underarm odor is in our society seen as being a loser. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you go to certain other countries, it's seen as being a winner. We've been taught from childhood that this is not what you can do. We've been taught, for example, that if you have some yellow stuff between your teeth, it means that you are going to be a loser. So fundamentally, we start to be very insecure. Now, what's fascinating about, for example, the whole shampoo market here in the U.S. is that in the old days, we were using a soap bar. But the problem is that soap bars cost more to manufacture than actually use liquid soap. So the big manufacturers went together and they started to release the liquid soap by actually teaching moms to use it in the shower. And as they taught them to use this brush or type of brush in the shower, the kids, which were the young boys, started to adapt that behavior. Mm-hmm. And then they will take it back to the schools. Because what we have seen from studies is that if you use liquid soap, it's seen as being very feminine, almost gay. Mm-hmm. So it was really difficult to sell in. But once the mother was priming the kid to do this, there was a huge turnaround happening. And they actually were sampling brush and sampling all the sorts of tools to put it on your skin, so you felt that it was a very masculine way of doing it. And today, the biggest market today is liquid soap, not a bar soap. So the whole market has been changed in 10 years without us being aware of it, and the battleground was actually in the shower where it took place.
And I guess we've been convinced that there's something kind of gross about using a bar soap if any other human being has touched it before us.
Yeah, and the reality is actually not the case at all. Mm-hmm. The reality is, coming back to the whole idea about sanitizing issue, that a bar, first of all, a soap bar, is just, if not even more clean than liquid soap. And I know that for a fact because I worked a lot in India where, for example, there is a brand called Lifebuoy, which is a soap bar, actually from Unilever as well, which is doing incredibly well and actually which is really stopping the health issues there. But the reality here is that the manufacturers, in some cases, not all cases, but in many cases, are going one step further. For example, when it comes to hand sanitizing products, they managed to create a special roadshow campaign, which I find scary. For example, what happens is that when you type in a keyword on the internet because you have a cold or you have a flu coming, and you want to find out if it's a cold or flu or what's happening, those data, of course, is collected by Google. Those keywords are sold on, and there's groups of organizations which are now predicting that there is a cold or a flu coming to Dallas. Hmm. And once that happens, there is a special roadshow of buses driving out to Dallas from one of the biggest manufacturers of sanitizing gels, and they will be standing there the day before you really are feeling that cold and giving you flyers and samples to tell you, hey, if you feel bad, you should have used this product. And really what happens is that you are primed just before you're most vulnerable in order to buy the product. And that's the type of techniques we're seeing happening right now, which in my mind, probably going a little bit too far.
Martin Lindstrom is my guest. His new book is called Brandwashed, Tricks Companies Use to Manipulate Our Minds and Persuade Us to Buy. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a self-designed graduate program that allows you the chance to meet the challenges of society. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with marketing consultant and consumer advocate Martin Lindstrom. His new book is called Brandwashed, Tricks Companies Use to Manipulate Our Minds and Persuade Us to Buy. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Martin, I imagine a lot of people are listening to this and thinking, well, I'll be more careful. I will resist the sales pitch. I will be aware of my surroundings in stores. You have discovered by installing a fake family in a neighborhood that perhaps we are most vulnerable to pressure we don't even see coming from our peers.
Yes, it was just a fascinating experiment we did. So based on a Hollywood movie released last year called The Jonases, mm-hmm. With Demi Moore, we actually started to consider doing exactly the same. So this film was all about how a fake family with actors were put in a local neighborhood. They were tasked with promoting as many brands as possible, and every day the sales were tracked. That was really the concept. Now, we did exactly the same. We actually had one of the best casting directors in the country identifying the perfect family. We had a producer from one of the biggest shows overseeing the whole experiment. It's a $3 million experiment we did. And we then identified this beautiful house in Laguna Beach in Florida, in California, where this house of five people, three young guys, all looking like mini Justin Biebers, mm-hmm. no kidding, you know, and Eric and Gina Morganson, as they're called, we asked them to be part of the experiment. We were hiding 35 cameras in the house. We had 14 team members overseeing the whole experiment 24/7, And over several months, we were then trying to find out what really goes on as they were recommending brands to their friends and family members without them being aware of it. Now, here's the shocking news. I was slightly skeptical about this, to be honest, because I thought, hey, yeah, word of mouth is important, but it probably won't drive sales. And I was so wrong. We actually saw that in 9 out of 10 cases, the brand was flying off the shelf. In fact, one of the brands had a peak of 1,000% in sales increase during that period. And it was just based on 5 people recommending it. And we saw that what happens is, and that's really shocking for me, when we later on revealed to all the friends and family members and stuff like that, they were part of the experiment, they didn't care. It was not like they said, I'm shocking, you know, I'm revolted about it. No. In fact, they were saying, oh, that's okay. And that was probably the biggest surprise for me as part of this experiment. But I must admit that what we learned overall was that in the future, we will see what I call sleeper cells. It probably will be individual families which are receiving a monthly check from promoting brands. Some of them will disclose it, some of them won't. But suddenly the neighbors will be really fearful of that cola you have to buy. And that's really the next generation of marketing where suddenly it's embedded into our society behind our closed doors.
What have you learned, Martin, about the link between self-esteem and the desire to have really obvious brands displayed in your life?
You know, it's such a good question. And I'll tell you a story, if we have time,
sure,
about how stupid I am as a consumer, right? So when I was young, I bought my gold Rolex. Can you believe that? It cannot be worse, right? I bought that because I felt I achieved the goals in my life, so you had to go out and buy a gold Rolex. Now, I had a meeting in Switzerland with some senior executives, and one of the guys ticked me on the back. He said, is that really a gold Rolex? And I said, yes, it is. He said, I would never have thought about that about you. And I was not sure about how to take it. Realized it's the worst thing you could do in Switzerland, which is kind of ironic because Rolex is from Switzerland, right? So I went straight down to the main street in one of the bigger cities and tried to sell it. And the guy said, well, it's only Russians and people from Middle East and women which are wearing that type of watch. So here it goes. So even I, working with brands every day, is affected by the signals we're sending. And what we have learned, unfortunately, is that the younger we are, the less self-esteem we have, the more we want to wear certain brands to give us a boost our self-esteem. And that's exactly what's happening right now. We saw in the study that there's a direct correlation between lack of self-esteem and consumption of brands, or let me call it obsession with brands. And it may be when you meet friends and they're plastered with brands and logos all over, that actually it's a very good indication of that person lacks self-esteem and is trying to project the self-esteem using brands to help him or her.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the line to Sue in Dallas. Hello, Sue.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your show. I want to make consumers aware that, for instance, I have two examples of products claiming to be green and or organic. Target's food line Archer Farms, if you look at the ingredients, it'll actually say organic fructose. And secondly,
It might be organic. It just is still fructose.
I'm sorry?
It might be organic. It's just still fructose.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or organic plastic, you know, organic artificial something. The other thing is Green Mountain Energy, which claims to be green electric company here in Dallas. Actually, we all share the same electric grid. So if you choose to use Green Mountain Energy for your electric company, it turns out to really be a crapshoot on whether or not you'll actually be part of the green-oriented grid, because it really all depends on zip code. And I'll take any comments or whatever off the air.
What do you want to say about that, Martin?
Well, listen, Sue, I agree with you. I think what I noticed when I looked at the labels and the disclaimers on our pack design today, that there is many different ways where you can turn it around. In my book, I give a lot of examples about how it's possible to write a disclaimer where it makes you feel this is so healthy or this is so good for the environment, and when we then disclose what it actually really means, it's totally reverse. But because we do not know the phrases, or because perception is really taking on board here and running with the whole game, we actually end up believing one thing, which quite often is very far removed from the reality. Now, here's my view on this. I think it's great that people like Sue and other people like Dan or Don is pushing this to the world, because in the future, brands will not be owned by companies. They will be owned by us, by the consumer. And if we love a brand, guess what? We're going to tell the world we love it, just like a lot of people love Apple, and they will tell the world. And if we don't like a brand because they're lying and cheating, we will also tell the world, and a brand will fail very quickly. So this is the time brands have now to get their house in order, and they better do so. And that's exactly the reason why I write Brand Wars, because I think it's time someone stands up. And I think the role I have, having a very strong inside view, having worked with almost all of the Fortune 100 brands in the world, is not just to give an insider view of this, but also, if you can't beat them, join them, to sit on the sideline and help them to get back on track, because that's really the biggest problem we have right now. They have no incentives of getting back on track.
Well, are you still consulting with these companies, and are they really interested in getting back on track, as it were, or are they still hoping that you'll give them the kinds of tips that you reveal in this book?
Well, I am still absolutely consulting companies, but I also do have some very strong views about who I would work for and who I don't work for. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you take some of the largest tobacco companies in the world, which I very, very strongly attacked some years ago in my previous book called Biology, you know, we managed to change partly the regulation of health warnings here in the United States for next year, and we managed to make Philip Morris withdraw the $120 million sponsorship of Formula One in Europe, which is similar to NASCAR race. So they've been contacting me 18 times to work for them, and absolutely I don't want to do it. When it comes to fast food manufacturer, yes, they contacted me, and my response to them is, if I can change the food, for example, at that child, you know, that kid meal you have, if I can change that in such a way that it becomes healthy and it's apples and green stuff, I would love to work with you guys. I think my stand has to be very much that, do you know what, if you stand and scream and shout at the company and say, you idiots, that won't change a lot. What will change is if we work with the companies to change for the better. And what I try to do with Brand Wars is to publish a book which consumers, hopefully, we will read and will put an enormous pressure on companies so they feel an incentive to change. Because so far, there's no incentive out there. No one is screaming and shouting. And because of that, I feel there's a risk we'll continue down this track until someone stands up.
We haven't really talked very much about the experience people have these days with online shopping. But you write a lot here about this tactic that online retailers give us, which is the impression that a great deal is going to vanish if we don't buy right now. And in fact, in some cases, simply if we navigate away from the site.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of the listeners right now have tried that. You are just about to buy whatever product online, and then, oh, you don't buy it, or you decide to buy it because there's a clock ticking down and the offer will vanish after 2 minutes. Well, here's the reality. The companies have cookied you already, which means they've tagged your identity, and that means that at that stage where you decide to leave the website and come back after a while, two things will happen. The first thing, most likely, which will happen is that they will email you if you gave them your email address during that sign-up process, and then tell you, hey, come back again, we'll give you 20% off.
Hmm.
Or even maybe you come back to the website, and it will tell you, you know, because you're such a good customer, we'll give you X percent off. So to leave the website in the middle of your sign-up process actually quite often pays off in a huge way, because they know they have nothing to lose. And I can tell you, you have everything to gain.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak next with Robert in Dallas. Hello, Robert.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the show. I was wondering if your guest could comment on kind of the over-sexualization of products that even, I'm 33, when I was a kid, weren't, like Dr. Pepper, for example. I have young sons, and I find myself having to turn off even commercials for bland products like soap or soda pop because of the setting up of women as sex objects, and it's really just morally destructive marketing. And I wonder if your guests would comment on that.
Thanks for a call.
Well, Robert, you're absolutely right. This is happening to a bigger and bigger degree, and I have some bad news for you. This is just the beginning. So a couple of years ago, I did a research study using fMRI in order to find out what is the role of sex in advertising. And the study showed that if you're just using sex in advertising just to use sex and create attention, the operations will succeed, but the patient will die, meaning that, yes, you'll generate a lot of attention and people will remember all the sexy bits, but no one will remember what the message was. And I think a good point here is when Paris Hilton was promoting a huge burger chain. Everyone remember her as she was half naked on the front of the car, but no one remember what the burger chain's name was. So that was the first message I learned, that things has to be in the right context. What I now have learned is that sex have an enormous effect on our mind and actually drives much more of our purchase behavior when it happens within the sex area and in within the theme. So here's the reality. Sex, in fact, is driving a lot, and sex will continue to drive a lot because we are hardwired to be seduced by sexual messages. And just to give you an idea about this, as part of Brandwash, we did an amazing study and very controversial study. So I want to apologize up front to all the listeners right now, but we did a study on gay and straight men. What we wanted to find out was that how come there's these half-naked men, male bodies on Calvin Klein's underwear boxes or in the Giorgio Armani ads or even on Men's Health. You have these, you know, torsos half naked. How come straight men at all are appealed by that? What we learned was, using fMRI, that in fact we all are drawn to our same sex when it comes to the appeal of not attraction, but the appeal of beautiness. Mm-hmm. And what we learned was really interesting, that when straight men are looking at those photos in the fMRI scanner, we had to learn there is a block going in saying you should not be aroused, you should not be stimulated by it, but you can be appealed by it because you can have a body somewhat similar to that.
Hmm.
So you can become like what you see in the ad, whereas gay men perhaps went one step further. So what we're seeing here is that ads at a non-conscious level is really making us make decisions without us being aware of it, like mirroring what we would like to be. And we literally a feeling we are that person we're looking at. So that's the reason why sex have an enormous influence and the reason why this is not going to disappear. I'm sorry, Robert.
What do you do to sort of check your buying? When you walk into a big box store or even a grocery store, how do you know that you're walking away only with what you wanted?
Well, I'll give you some tricks, at least the tricks I'm using, which sometimes work, Chris. First of all, I never use a shopping cart.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I don't do that is because we know today that if the size of the shopping cart is double, you actually are spending up to 30% more. Because it's like we are hoarding. We want to grab as many products as we can into that shopping cart because now we're finally out shopping. And it may be we at an unconscious level feel that everyone else is shopping ahead of us, so I might lose out. Remember, even though we won't admit it, we were monkeys some time ago, and that's all about survival instinct. So use your hands, and guess what? If you can't hold all the stuff, it may be a good indicator that you shouldn't buy it. Well, unless you are a family of 15, right? That's the first thing.
I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there because we've run out of time.
Okay, fair enough.
Martin Lindstrom's new book is called Brandwashed: Tricks Companies Use to Manipulate Our Minds and Persuade Us to Buy. Martin, it's always an education. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.